everyone. Good morning and welcome. This is Romola D from Romola D Reports, and I'm here again this morning with Dr. Robert Young, and he has a breaking story to reveal. This is very, very important information. It's going to be of world-changing significance, truly. And Dr. Robert Young has been doing some major research in this area. He's just published a report at his website, and he's here this morning to discuss his findings and the entire report. Dr. Robert Young, as you know, is a very well-known clinical and research scientist. His areas of study are molecular biology, medical microbiology, clinical nutrition, and naturopathy. And he can correct me at this point. Dr. Young, perhaps this is the moment to just throw the floor open to you to ask you perhaps to say a few words about your background in research in this area, how long you've been at it, etc. And can you confirm for us also, before we start discussing your report, that these are your own findings, this is your own research that you are presenting?
Great. Well, it's good to see you. Thank you for that very generous introduction. And it's said that time flies when you're having fun. And as I look back on my 40-year plus career in medical biology, microbiology, and in the work I've done in microscopy, using all types of techniques from phase contrast to bright field to dark field to transmission to scanning electron microscopy, all these different modalities to identification of colloidal particulates, nanoparticulates. This is a field that I've been interested in many, many years. Part of my background in education in training was in Germany and with Dr. Marie Blecker at the Enderlin Institute, and that really formed a lot of the basis and direction of my career. And her work was based upon the work of Gunther Enderlin. And Gunther Enderlin, a German scientist who really followed the work of another great scientist and medical doctor, Antoine Deschamps. And there's people in between there, you know, from Royal Rife to Dr. Livingston Wheeler to Gaston Naissens, the great Canadian biologist who did a lot of work in phase contrast microscopy. So not only have I done research in this area, but I also taught it. I've taught it at the university level, and I've published several articles in various peer-reviewed journals. So I've been very active in not only the research, but also in the development of nutraceuticals that have been used now for over four decades, beginning back in the 80s, to really help people deal with this. So nanotechnology and colloidal systems and the development to be used in biologicals for nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals is a growing area. Using scanning electron microscopy and transmission electron microscopy and the identification to determine particulates that I'll be describing in the various modalities is work that's going around the world, and we each share and compare. And there are some standard micrographs that people use of mine and we use of theirs in order to validate what we're seeing under the microscope.
I see.
What we're evaluating and the particulates we're evaluating. We no one stands alone. You know, I mean, we share this material so we can validate anatomically, physiologically, and functionally what's going on. And so having a microscope at the age of five and then working with identification and teaching, for the last 40 years bright field phase contrast and dark field microscopy to working with the transmission electron microscopy and scanning electron microscopy and EDS testing for nanoparticulates and microparticulates. This is an area that I've been writing about. So people can read this work and see that it dates back all the way to the 80s, 90s, you know, and for the last 20 years. In fact, I did my first double-blinded test on the bioeffects of electromagnetic frequencies on the effects of the human blood. And that was published by the International Journal of Complementary and Alternative Medicine in 2001. And so I understood the effects of radio and microwave radiation on the human cell, and I documented that in the micrographs that date back over now 22, 23 years, which was then later published by Dr. Beverly Rubick, who I give credit to, okay, who was a research scientist at the time at the University of California, Berkeley, and also to Peter Duisberg, who's at the University of California, Berkeley, who did a lot of the research analysis on one of the major scientists at the time of Robert Gallo in trying to determine HIV and its causative effects as a virus on the human organism, causing, you know, the symptomologies of acquired immune deficiencies or AIDS. And of course, that's now been overturned. Of course, Peter Duisberg, who I respect highly, wrote a book called Inventing the AIDS Virus, but he also wrote a book inside the book called Inventing the Ebola Virus. And then he also wrote a book within the book called Inventing the Hepatitis Virus, you know. And
this
the
is
list
what we were talking about earlier.
On.
Yeah, that all yeah, these viruses so, actually don't exist.
So now we have over 75 letters from various institutions, governments, and universities, and asking them a very specific question. Have you identified, and for the CDC, this question was asked, and I have copies of these letters, was asked by Christine Massey from Canada. And but these questions have been asked, and others have got on board to continue to ask. Even the state of California has now been asked for them to come forth and show us the identification, isolation, and the morphology of the coronavirus. And of course, no one can produce anything. No one.
They can't. I've also no asked the state of Massachusetts.
From any lab, from any hospital, from any university, from every government entity can give us a report on that, a report on this, and show us the evidence or send us a testing sample, you know, to compare to of
There's
HIV.
There's not a single paper on the subject. Nobody is isolated it anywhere around the world using Koch's postulates, as you pointed out in our last conversation, Dr. Young.
Well, Koch's postulates and also Rivers, which was in, you know, which was later than Koch's. So, I mean, there is the gold standard for identifying germs, i.e. whatever you want to call them based on their size. Because a lot of people don't know this. Prior to the 60s, viruses were called filterable bacteria. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Okay. And they later became called viruses and coined that. Of course, in Latin, virus means poison. Corona means radiation. So if you put the two words together, what you have is radiation poisoning, which just on the news last night, they were talking about 200 people that were affected by a syndrome, which has unknown pathology, even though I described this in another article, the pathology of the Havana syndrome, which has been going on for 5 to 6 decades, is bombarding using direct energy weapons.
People all over the world, really. It's interesting. It was reported in Vietnam last night.
This was in Vietnam. That claim that they're affected by radiation poisoning called the Havana effect syndrome. And here again, this pulsating radiation which is not well understood, other than the fact that if you own a microwave, you can understand that you would never put your head into a microwave. And you surely are holding your head to a phone that's putting out at least 2.4 gigahertz, which is the same radiation or frequency microwave field that's being put out by your home microwave oven. You're holding up to your head, or you're exposing yourself in your home. And you wonder why you've got lightheadedness or dizziness or muddled thinking or forgetfulness or high fever, or you're having night sweats, or your menstrual cycles are off. And of course, I wrote an article on this that was published, Integrative Molecular Biology, the Causes of Oxygen Deprivation, which is one of the symptoms of SARS. And I need to share this, of course, with you with my screen here. So let me see if I can with you. But hopefully people will understand that I have a long history.
Oh, yes. I think you've definitely established that. You have. It sounds like you really have gained great expertise in the subject and in the field of actually using these instruments, you know, the electron microscope, et cetera, transmission electron microscopy, et cetera.
Yeah, TAM and SAM by mm-hmm. Abbreviation, scanning and transmission electron microscopy. One, SAM actually bombards the particulate that you're trying to evaluate off the material, where mm-hmm. transmission, the difference, TEM actually goes into, and picks up. I think it's more accurate, but both of them are good. I have the ability to use both, just like I use dark field or phase contrast or bright field. But, you know, TEM is very similar to bright field because it's illuminating. It's the light, the path of electrons is passing through the object that you're evaluating. SEMs or scanning electron microscopy bounces off the particulate. Using TEM is very, very important if you want to determine what's inside the liposomes mm-hmm. or the capsid or the lipid particulate that contains something in. And this is what I measure. What we're talking about.
I'm hoping we can talk more about it shortly, because that indeed is what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, is it even possible to go to that level to actually look at the lipid capsules in the vaccine?
Yeah, I have pictures of them. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. We have the lipid, we have the liposomes, the lipid capsid, and we've evaluated and I say we because some do not want to be identified personally, and here again, for their protection. I take great risks by even talking about this in a public way.
Yes.
Humanity needs to know what is in that serum, that vial, that solution, that aqueous solution, what is contained therein.
Absolutely.
And here again, you can determine for yourself whether or not, being your choice, once you have this knowledge, you can then decide whether you want to be inoculated or not. That's your choice. And whether you believe in, which I don't, just so you know this, I do not believe in the viral theory. In fact, I've written articles on dismantling it. I actually spoke at the International Conference on Viruses and Vaccines and Vaccinations in not only Rome, but also in Dubai, presenting this material to various scientists and doctors and researchers around the world. This is not to expose, you know, something diabolical. It's to educate and understand, you know, what this, and of course they're hiding behind government laws, and they're hiding, those who are producing these vaccines are hiding behind an emergency
authorization
to use that without disclosing the ingredients. And this is unheard of. It's never happened in the history of the world. So you have a right, I believe, a human right, to know what is going inside your body. And then you can decide whether you want to have that concoction injected. But the symptoms of corona are real. The virus is not real.
So there is some disease, but it's not a virus.
The symptoms are real. The question is, what is causing it?
Right.
And is there a corona effect? Are there spike proteins? Yes, there are spike proteins, but spike proteins are endogenous. They're not, I mean, yes, you can take spike proteins or a particulate from a human or animal source and infuse those or encapsulate those into these lipids and then, let's say, direct those in to provide some sort of reaction, which is the current immunity idea is that you put a little bit of whatever the toxin is or the particulate to build up some form of immunity. And this is nonsense. It's literally scientific nonsense because it isn't found with the lymphocytes or antibodies. It's found in managing and maintaining the alkaline design of the fluids of the body. So when we look at the effects, which are germs, these are biological transformations or breakdown products due to the actual causative effects. And those are environmental. So they can come from water, they can come from food, they can come from air, they can come from, you know, inoculating these noxious substances into your
previous
vascular
inoculations,
fluid,
yeah.
Into the interstitium.
So what I wanted to share with you was some of the published research that was done. The work was actually done in 2019, published
okay.
in 2020, and also 2021. And it was published in this, I don't know if you can see this or not, this
yes, I can see
molecular
it,
biology and bio. What causes oxygen deprivation in blood? And of course, this started in of SARS. SARS is an acronym that stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. Anything that's a syndrome is suggesting that it's an unknown pathology. So they don't know what's really causing it. But here in this article, I describe the pathology of SARS. And COVID or the coronavirus 2002, 2012, and then 2019. But all this business of coronas dates back, you know, 50, 60 years, back to the 60s. And the actual effect, which you see behind me, which I call the corona effect. Corona effect is the deterioration of the cell membrane, which gives rise to the spike proteins. So I want people to understand this very well. I'm using a scientific testing method, which is called phase contrast microscopy, which diffuses light as you're looking under a microscope, okay? And the magnification here is thousands of times, okay? But under the eyepieces, it's about 1,000 times. If I magnify that, you can see this, then of course, something like a red blood cell, which is approximately 7 microns, and a micron is 1/25,000th of an inch. You can actually see these tiny red blood cells, and you can then magnify them, even higher magnifications using digital technology, and then take pictures of them on your computer. And we do that with TEM and also with SEM, so scanning electron microscope, particularly TEM, which is transmission, which works like bright field. But this is called phase contrast microscopy. And here you see the spiking of the red blood cells. Now, I don't know what's coming to your mind. Maybe you're thinking, well, what does a normal blood look like?
That's right. I think a lot of people would ask that.
Okay, so you have to have comparisons, okay? These comparisons are my comparisons, okay? But if they're not my comparisons, then I'm going to reference that as a comparison and note that I'm comparing
for anatomical identification. So scientists share information with each other in order to validate anatomically, morphologically, what they're looking at. So healthy round blood cells under phase contrast microscopy are even in color, even in shape, and even in size. Okay, so here we see lower magnification, okay, here versus the one behind me, which is higher magnification. We're actually looking at white centers. You see those white centers?
Yes. Are they really white centers?
Yeah, they're white centers. They're actually holes.
Okay.
The traditional hematologist would suggest that the centers are concave. That's where you get a shadowing effect. But these cells are called codicites. Codicites are cells that have holes in them. So you can actually look right through them. And so that's not the case with healthy cells. Healthy cells aren't concave. They're hydrated, and therefore they don't show this differentiation in color from the edge where you see darker on the membrane and lighter on the core. These are all even in color, even in shape, and even in size. That's significant. Because if the cells are concave, that tells me the cell is dehydrated. If there's a hole in it, then that cell has lost its hemoglobin.
It's
lost its hemoglobin, which is one of the symptoms of COVID. Not because of the virus, but by other contributing factors. This is a function. Now, one thing I'm going to say here, which 99.9% of the world's population doesn't even know, is that hemoglobin is what provides immunity to the body.
Not the white blood cells, the macrophages.
No, the white blood cells are sanitation engineers.
Mm.
They go around and pick things up, sweep things up. You know, they'll even have some solutions. They're called ROS, reactive oxygen species, which they secrete, which are reduced hydrogen and reduced oxygen. And I don't know how deep you want to get into this. I mean, I can go very deep, but I'm trying to keep it simple.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to share with you is that people on the surface will take whatever's being said because they don't understand the biology of what I'm talking about, and they don't do the testing, and so they have to trust.
Yes, and you know, Dr. Young, I think part of the issue over here is that the world of biology, microbiology, molecular biology, immunology is being presented to the layperson as so complex and so intricate that we are being given no other option but to trust that these are experts. They've studied this under microscopes for years. They know what they're talking about. You've got
they
to
don't.
Trust them.
They don't know what they're talking about. They're storytellers.
Because the virus theory is just a theory. It has never been
proven. Virus theory has never been proven. Never. Not by anyone.
Many years ago,
because I saw what's happening to a lot of people in the 80s and 90s, I offered a $1 million reward, and then I upped it to $5 million for anyone that could identify, isolate, purify, and isolate the HIV virus. It's never been done.
Louis Montagnier
received the Nobel Prize for his discovery for HIV. And yet he was disfellowshipped at the University of Paris and put out to pasture, ended up in China. We met up in Milan, Italy in 2011.
Okay.
And I asked him what happened. He says, well, you know, I changed some of my opinions. I don't, just like Duisberg, HIV does not cause AIDS. And I said, well, what is it? I says, well, you know, here again, they don't know.
Has he published this change of opinion?
Well, he received the Nobel Prize. And then here again, they've had to pull off of this because any real scientist who's looking at the gold standard for isolation, purification and isolation of any particular element, you know, organic or non-organic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Needs to do that without then putting it through, let's say, viral cells, which contaminates the isolation. But if you're going to isolate something, you have to isolate it. You have to purify, then isolate, and then you have to infuse that into,
a healthy animal or person, right?
Yeah, to create the same symptoms that were created in the first. That's never been done with HIV. That's why I call it monkey business, because they were doing the testing on monkeys. They could never recreate AIDS by injecting their so-called HIV samples or their so-called isolations into those monkeys.
And yet they've projected huge propaganda around the world that, you know, it's actually being transmitted through bodily fluids.
Well, the same person that started the propaganda on HIV is the same person that started the propaganda on the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. They're the same person.
Who is that person? Or need we ask?
Well, you just have to go back to history and who is the director.
Right. Yeah.
Of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease, who is it now?
It's
the same lie that's been promulgated.
Perfectly, okay, I think, to mention his name, Dr. Fauci. You know, he was present there and he's present here as well. And one has to wonder, of course, behind one person is always a whole network, right?
Well, the narrative has been going on for a very long time. And here again, it's to the benefit of who?
Right.
To the people? I don't think so.
Or to a group of very power-hungry elite.
Yeah. So here again, I don't discount the fact that there's a corona effect. I discount the fact that there's actually a virus, a specific isolated virus that's actually causing these specific diseases. And I've said this, and I've said this now for four decades, and I've been on this for over 40 years. Germs do not cause disease. Germs are the symptoms of cellular breakdown due to a diseased environment, which has many contributing factors, i.e. food pollution, water pollution, air pollution, inoculation or drug pollution, you know, lifestyle pollutions, including what you think, what you feel, and what you believe. These are the contributing factors that pollute the vascular, then the interstitial fluids, which are either eliminated through the pores of the skin or through urination or defecation or respiration, or then accumulate into the connective tissues, i.e. the muscle or the fat, causing irritation, inflammation, induration, ulceration, and degeneration, which brings me back to my first publication in the 80s, which was called One Sickness, One Disease, and One Treatment. But this is not good for business if there's only one sickness and one disease and one treatment. And the one sickness and one disease I defined is the over-acidification of the blood and then the interstitial fluids due to an inverted way of living, eating, and thinking. And the one treatment is to restore the alkaline design of the body fluids through an alkalarian, which I trademarked and copyrighted, the word alkalarian, not vegetarian, not fruitarian. These don't work. Not veganism. No, it's alkalarianism.
Very interesting.
And I defined that on the stage of Tony Robbins in 1998. Where I introduced the word alkalarian, which was the invention credit due to my son, Adam Redford Young. He came up with the word. I didn't.
Brilliant.
Okay. And the reason we came up with this word is because Tony Robbins asked me, what do you call this? This is not vegetarian. It's not vegan. What is it? And Adam came up with the word alkalarian. I said, perfect. He's a wordologist. I mean, he comes up with beautiful, beautiful words. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I come up with one. So I coined the word the spike protein effect. or the
Corona effect.
Yeah,
I think that's from very sharp phrase, very striking phrase, the Corona
spiked effect. Protein effect or the Corona effect. You know, so if we're looking at lost hemoglobin, then it's obvious that if we're losing hemoglobin, and that can be quantified under tests that we do, which are called comprehensive blood tests, which test blood counts anatomically, that tests hemoglobin anatomically, you know, the number of molecules are measured. Mm-hmm. And then we can visually see it under the various scanning microscopy mechanisms, from electron to, you know, from transmission to scanning to phase to even dark field. So it's obvious to me that I've cross-correlated qualitative testing with anatomical testing with quantitative testing to determine that if I see codicites, that this person is low in hemoglobin, which is what causes anemia.
Now, do you see these codicites in people who are supposed to be suffering from these so-called SARS-CoV illnesses?
Because the main molecule that's used to manage and maintain the alkaline design of the body fluids is hemoglobin. It's not these reactive oxygen species of hydroxyl radicals and SO minus and HO minus that's released by the killer lymphocytes. The red blood cells is not even, it's actually second in line. So the hemoglobin is used if there's not enough production of sodium bicarbonate in the cover cells of the stomach. And so one of the symptoms of corona is nausea. One of the symptoms of imbalances within the blood and the interstitium is nausea. Nausea now has a pathology, which has never been described until I described it. The pathology of nausea is the body's not lack of acid, but a lack of the lack of sodium bicarbonate and the increase of acidic contributing factors, which can be chemical or radioactive contributors. So what happens is when you lose hemoglobin, the body's now on second phase defense in order to maintain the purity and cleanliness of the internal fluids so cell membranes don't break down. And you, if it continues, of course, then they coagulate. And when they coagulate together and clot, mm-hmm. like you see here in these slides,
yeah.
And if we then use a scanning, you know, we use an electron microscope, we can actually see the actual protein fibers that are created, factor 7 that creates fibrinogen and then fibrin monomers that leads to pathological blood coagulation and then prevents the inability for the blood cells, which need to go in single file into the pulmonary system to dump its carbon dioxide, pick up oxygen in order to maintain, you know, oxygenation for the body.
And this right, is so they can't
doing.
Move.
They're, mm-hmm. they're actually putting an oximeter on your finger and testing the oxygen levels in the hospital. And I'm going, are these people stupid? Why don't you just look at the friggin' blood and see what's going on? The person's already in pathological blood coagulation. They're not getting oxygen because the cells have to pass single file into the pulmonary system to dump in the alveolus their carbon dioxide. So they're in hypercapnia. And then they're using drugs to lyse the blood, which further destroys the blood, which actually complicates and creates more pathological blood coagulation rather than focusing on the environment or the one disease where this person is in decompensated acidosis. If they would just test the blood and anatomically come up with a number, they would see that this person's pH has dropped from 7.365 into the 7.2s. And that's why hydroxychloroquine works, is because it's raising the pH of those fluids by 0.2%, 2 points, not percent, but 2 points. And that's enough to save the patient rather than trying to lyse the cell, break the cells apart, and cut down the pathological blood coagulation, which the body's creating clotting because there's injury. And the injury is coming from a polluted internal environment due to what people are eating, what they're drinking, what they're breathing, what they're inoculating. All this is a contributing factor. And this is what 99% of the blood looks like. Not like this. This is like 0.1% of this 8 billion people, including the people that we've already mentioned. They don't have blood like this. They have blood that is affected. And I can find a corona cell in every human body.
Because of radiation.
Except for those who are aware of what I'm talking about. And how do you protect the cell membrane from degeneration? Because if you protect the membrane, which is kind of the wall around the fort, you don't want it to get to the castle, which is the nucleus, the nucleus of the cell, where the genetics is. Because what is being done is genotoxic. So that's what concerned me. When I wrote this, I then described the pathology and what are causing these symptoms, and then associated to various contributing factors due to pollution within the solutions, i.e. decompensated acidosis of the blood and the interstitium fluids. And this led to pathological blood coagulation, which led to hypercapnia, which led to hypoxia, which leads to suffocation by death. And ventilation is not the key. More oxygen is not the key. You're treating symptoms. And so that's why so many people are dying. And so the question comes,
that's such a brilliant...
Not a single person has to die. And the reason it's affecting older people, because they're already in pathological blood coagulation, they're not circulating and percolating. They already have blockages within, you know, the blood, even the capillaries. And so their circulation is good. But if you can improve that, you can save the patient. But we're focusing on the wrong thing. We're focusing on spike protein. We're focused on exosomes, or we're focused on, you know, the clot. But the clot is an effect of pollution or acidity within the fluids of the body. So that's why I wrote this article. And of course, showing the testing, we can then quantify every element in the blood and every element in the interstitium, and include, we can then test and quantify. That's why Dr. Galina Migalko and I published in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then we announced, because we already knew what the cause of cancer was. And we shared that because we were working with the University of Southern California. And we were ready to publish in peer-reviewed articles the cure for cancer. And it was stopped. It took me, after going through a lot of persecution, it took me up until 2019 in London, where I actually presented to the scientific community this information, this life-saving information. But we actually published it in a peer-reviewed article in 2015. But this is something we do. I mean, we do 3D full-body bioelectro scans, and we're picking and quantifying up the particulates from calcium, for example, where you may see normal calcium levels in the blood, knowing that the blood only represents 10% of the total body fluids. We then test the interstitium, which is the largest organ of the body, and its fluids. And we see that this person is in hypercalcemia because we quantify the calcium, and then we can then see the origin and the where it's coming from and the loss of bone. And which bones are breaking down? The skeletal system is being deteriorated in order to release calcium ions into the interstitium to maintain the fluids. And I want people to understand that these fluids that I'm talking about, these interstitium fluids, Let's see if I have a picture of them.
And maybe describe for people what exactly you mean. You know, where exactly are the interstitial? Are they outside the cell?
Well, that's what I'm going to show you here. You see, this red here, that's vascular fluids. It's a closed system. The only way fluids get out of this is through hydrostatic pressure.
I see.
So it pushes it out. Okay, so all the waste of the blood go where? Into the fluids that surround every cell of the human body. So this is like the freeway. It gets off the street, which is the vascular system, and it jumps onto the freeway. And the freeway, which are the interstitial fluids, flows through everything.
And there is that fluid. See, most people may not know that there is that fluid. People just think you have cells, you have tissues, you have organs.
That fluid flows through everything, from the brain to your toe. And that's why when you have, let's say a mass or a lesion in the breast, that's leaking into the interstitium and it's flowing to the liver, it's flowing to the brain. And this is what causes metastasis.
I was going to say, they call it metastasis, don't they?
When that's never been described before in any of the literature until recently, just last month, a doctor figured it out. That the transport is not cells, but it's actual poisons from that cellular breakdown that's then transferring that waste, and it's affecting other organs and organ systems, causing them, their membranes to deteriorate and break down, leading to liver cancers and pancreatic cancers or brain cancer, what have you.
And so this is the terrain you're talking about. This is the environment that you've got to keep pristine in order to maintain a healthy body.
There isn't a lab in the United States measuring this.
Wow. You'd mentioned that the last time, and I guess the question is, you know, how would you measure it? And I think you talked about urine.
Well, I mean, we actually put, you can see these electrodes on the forehead. We have plates for the hands and the feet, and we actually measure the frequencies, the vibrational frequencies of every element and every cell of the body. And we can then pick that up. We can quantify that and pick that up.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this is the same thing we're doing with any particulates in the body, whether it's coming from food or whether it's coming from air or whether it's coming from the friggin' inoculation, which is not a vaccine, which is providing some pseudo immunity, which is now just another story. It's been going on for many, many years.
It is, and they make it very complex.
So, you know, to the polio, to the HIV, to now the SARS. But it's you just have to follow the money. So using a bioelectro scan of the entire body fluids, we can determine the elements, and we can quantify the blood, you know, to do blood chemistries, to do, blood counts, to doing, a whole spectrum of all the elements within the interstitial fluids and what's happening there. At the same time, simultaneously, we can measure, and these results are within 5 to 10 minutes. We know exactly if that person is in decompensated acidosis or alkalosis. We get a number, both of the blood, and we get a number of the interstitium fluids, which is, by the way, the largest organ of the body. So the reason you have to have a basis, you know, in other words, you know, you're taking steps here of understanding. I'm coming from a highly precision testing background and analyzing specific elements to determine the cause of specific symptomologies that the genesis, and that's why one of my other articles, you can look it up, that's published, it's called The Genesis of SARS, which is found in the interstitial fluid. That's where disease begins. Doesn't begin in the cell.
I think we have to bring these articles up and really promote them so other people can read them and figure this out. This is major information.
Well, I sent you a link, a PDF file. And eventually, yes, I'm going to be providing a PDF file for different research. But I mean, right now, they're not in PDF. Some of them are not in PDF form. But this one was published in 2020.
Terrific. I'm happy to post the link below, and I'll post the PDF on my website so people can access it.
I mean, if we have time, I can pull that other article on the interstitial fluids, but there's other scientists that are studying this from their perspective and their experience. This is my experience. This is my perspective.
Yeah.
It comes after looking at millions of samples, not thousands, millions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we should do a focus on the interstitial fluids another time. Dr. Young, did you want to actually talk about, you know, your big discovery, your research discovery on the vaccines and the blood of the vaccinated?
Yeah.
Currently?
You know, I want to, let me just go and find this other article that we're talking about and bring it up because here again, it's like a domino. You know, one thing leads you, you tip the domino,
it
one
does,
thing
yeah.
leads you to another thing, to another thing, to another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Having experience in blood morphology and in various microscopy techniques,
mm-hmm.
just apply that also then to the aqueous solutions of the actual vaccine contents. So whether I'm looking at blood serum or interstitial fluid serum, or looking at the aqueous solution, which in it we add a 0.9% solution of saline, which is the actual percentage that is given when you go to chronic, you know, to an emergency room, or if you're in the hospital, they'll hook you up to a 0.9% saline solution. Let me see if I can go here. Do you have any other thoughts or questions you wanted to ask me?
Well, I'm especially interested in your article on the findings. So if you wanted to share that, you know, we can go down through it. I guess what I wanted to ask you, first of all, is just if you wanted to share with the world, what exactly did you find? What did you find as you looked through the vaccines in those vials? I think you looked at Pfizer, Moderna.
I'm just looking for the article right now, and I'm going to be sharing that with you.
Okay. Yeah. If you're talking about the interstitial fluids, I think, boy, that's a whole subject in itself. And talking about the codicites, it sounds like the codicites are a real
key. Codicites are caused by loss of hemoglobin due to interstitial toxics. In other words, the cells, the blood is absorbing the waste, and the hemoglobin is lost in doing so. So if you're looking at, you know, priority, number one, the stomach is responsible for producing an alkaline compound called sodium bicarbonate, which helps to maintain the integrity of the cell membrane by keep maintaining the integrity of the swimming pool, which is the vascular and interstitial fluids. So in that, the stomach is trying to reduce the acid loads. For example, if you over-exercise, if you're exercising or moving or even thinking, you're producing an acidic waste product called lactic acid. If you're over-exercising, abundance leads up, and that lactic acid is mediated by the stomach producing sodium bicarbonate to neutralize that lactic acid. That lactic acid also can be chelated by fats, I can show you what that looks like. But here again, if the lactic acid remains in the fluids, it'll deteriorate the blood membranes or the cell body membranes, leading to the corona effect, leading to the spike protein.
So any kind of stoppage of that process of cleaning out the waste will lead to it.
Well, anytime you are not removing your metabolic, dietary, respiratory waste, that has to be put somewhere.
Right, right.
So if we're looking at this, it'll take an actual, if the body's not getting rid of it, it has to push it out into the connective tissue, i.e. the muscles, or that's why we have stiffness. That's why we have charley horses. That stiffness or soreness is coming, that inflammation anywhere in the body is coming from the interstitial fluids, not able to remove this waste out through the out into the lymphatic system through the pores of the skin or through urination. Therefore, it builds up. The body has to get rid of it. It can chelate it by using fats to chelate it, causing sclerotic plaque or crystals. And I see those all the time. And I've identified those using the various microscopy techniques. You know, those things, if I look at this, I mean, I'll show you a picture later, but I wanted to bring you then to the fact that the second in line is the hemoglobin.
Okay.
Third in line is elements or electrolytes within the blood or the interstitium themselves. But then you get the white blood cells, and the major one, which is called neutrophils, those are the garbage cutters. They go around and pick up all the collateral damage from the cellular breakdown. Okay, and in doing so, they're just sanitation generator. But if it builds up and the pH keeps dropping, to save the patient, to save the human or the animal, the body then activates the lymphocytes to release chemicals. They're called reoxygen oxygen species of reduced oxygen and reduced hydrogen to neutralize the acid so it doesn't cause any more collateral damage, more damage to the membranes or damage to the genetics. The inoculation doesn't address any of what I just said. It doesn't reduce that process. What reduces that process is by changing what you eat, changing what you drink, changing what you breathe. You know, stop putting poisons in your body to build some phantom antibody that will then neutralize some antigen which you're creating yourself.
This is actually huge. I mean, it's just such a major change in thinking, I think, for many people, but it makes absolute sense that basically if you put pollutants in your body, you're harming your body, and that's what's really causing you illness.
Yeah, you are the cause of your condition.
Mm-hmm.
But human nature is to blame it on somebody else. What, it's that person's fault. Rather than if you look in the mirror and you're asking, why do I have shallow breathing? Why do I have a fever? Why do I have pain in my joints? Why do I have breakouts on my skin? Why do I have this lesion in my breast? You are the author of this. The body, if it can't get rid of it, is going to put it somewhere. And for a woman, it's to the breast tissue, the fatty tissue. Could go into the brain, but there's that barrier there. Mm-hmm. But that can be broken, okay, with nanoparticulates. It can pass right through the blood-brain barrier. It can pass right through the air-blood barrier. That's why these inoculations are so dangerous, is because the particulates break through the blood-brain barrier, which is protective, and the air-blood barrier, and the testicular or ovarian blood barrier. The particulates go right in, and from their own science, Pfizer's, if the question is, where does the contents, whatever the contents are, if the contents go somewhere, where does it go and what source does it go on? Okay. Well, it travels through a fluid of the body. That fluid is not vascular because the vascular is going to push it out into the interstitium. But it travels to every organ, every gland, and if it's injected into the blood, it will go 70 to 80% of the time to the testicles, the gonads, or to the ovaries.
That's what they found with these Japanese Pfizer biodistribution studies, right?
Right. The other 20% goes to the bone marrow, and the other is distributed to the heart. How is it getting there? Do you want to guess, or do you know now?
It's through the interstitial fluid, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's how it travels. It travels on the freeway of fluids that are flowing through everything.
So literally,
if the particulate is small enough in the nano range, that's 1/1,000,000th of a meter, in the nano range, it can pass through any cell membrane. And if it's less than 35 nanometers, it can pass into the nucleus or even affect the atoms if it's less than 10. Now, atom is 1 nanometer, a single atom.
This is terrifying. How could these people put nanoparticulates into vaccines and then inject everybody with them? It sounds like
don't have the money to buy an electron microscope, and they don't have the money to buy, you know, let's say a Zeiss, you know, scanning microscope for dark.
Right, and people don't understand either how these things work and, you know, what you're looking for and what does it all mean. So honestly, the work you're doing is major.
I don't want to give anybody the illusion that these scanners actually take color pictures. Okay?
Right.
All microscopy work, unless it illuminates a particular frequency to give off light. For example, lactic acid has a specific frequency. And so when I see lactic acid in the blood using microscopy, it appears green. If I find uric acid, it appears orange. If I see sulfuric acid, it appears yellow. If I see citric acid, it appears more white or clear.
So it does have a little bit of coloration then when you look.
It does, but this is.
This is a little bit exaggerated.
Electron microscope, and these are colorized.
It's been colorized.
Now, the reason I put this up, this is not my picture, and I do give credit to where it's from, but.
Okay.
And it's nothing specific that I want to talk about. It's just an interesting colorized electron, microscopic picture,
mm-hmm.
and a colorization for points of discussion. It also weeds out a lot of people. But as I've described it, I am not really describing the picture. I'm actually describing that these spikes that are coming off the membranes are actually endogenously coming off. It's not an infection. It's not going in. It's coming out. This is where I created a whole new word. This is an outfection, not an infection.
It's an outfection. Mm-hmm.
Now you see this dark area? That's the fluid. It's an outfection of the breakdown of matter. With the idea from the foundational principle in physics, that matter cannot be created nor can it be destroyed. It can only change its form or function.
Is this the toxins being pushed out of the cell then?
These appendages, these spikings.
Yeah.
These are coming out of the cell.
Right. They're coming out. So what are they pushing out of the cell? I mean, what
is it? They're just fragments. They're genetic fragments or proteins and fats, particulates coming from anatomical particulates. Antoine Béchamp described them in the turn of the 19th century. He called them microzymas or small beings, because after you cremate a body.
What the microzymas are that he talks about. Okay.
The microzymas are the precursors to all organized matter. So it's the only thing left after the deterioration of the genetic material. Genetic material is not alive. Genetic material is made up of anatomical elements.
Mm-hmm.
That give life to the gene, that gives life to the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Cells in and of themselves are not living. They're composed of particulate matter,
mm-hmm.
of energy, life, but this matter cannot be destroyed. You can try to cut it. You can try to radiate it. You can try to cook it. You can crush it, but you can't get rid of it. So there's a percentage of all of us, once that is all broken down, all of our genetics is broken down, all of our body cells, our brain cells, our heart cells, all of our blood cells are broken down, there's a powder. If I take that powder and reconstitute it in a 0.9% solution, it becomes mm-hmm. alive again.
Oh, wow.
So it's all environmental. Depending on organization and disorganization of matter, from the law of physics, no matter can be destroyed or created. It can only be organized or disorganized based upon the context or the environment. And this is what the emphasis of the last 4 decades of my research has brought, is I'm looking at cells from an environmental perspective rather than as an infectious perspective. I'm looking at what's coming out with these cells that are behind me, mm-hmm. the cellular disorganization and the pleomorphic activity, which is matter changing into different forms based upon the context or the environment. This is exactly what happens in your refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Food doesn't get old, it molds. Bodies don't get old, they're mold, but mold is not an infection. Mold is a cycle of cellular disorganization of matter, which eventually goes to the microzyma. So there's one continuous cycle of matter organized and disorganized, and yeast and bacteria, or these smaller particulates, which prior to 1960 were called filterable bacteria, are just organizations of indestructible matter, of dust, okay, of particulate matter, which can organize and disorganize to create a whole another animal or plant or human being.
Oh, wow.
So when I'm looking at the abstract, there were four major pharmaceutical companies, now that we've set the foundation, so you understand where I'm
going. Yes, absolutely. No, it's been very, very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, that the so-called SARS-CoV-2, now called SARS-CoV-19, so severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus, COV-19, refers to the year 2019. There's four companies, mm-hmm. major companies. There may be others. These are the major ones. There's Pfizer Biotech. They have a modified RNA vaccine. The second one is Moderna with Lonza. They have a synthetic, I think they all combine synthetic
mRNA,
yeah. 1273 vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So the Moderna company, the Lonza company. Then the next one is the Janssen.
Okay.
That's Johnson & Johnson or J&J.
Right.
COVID mm-hmm. vaccine. And they're, as I say, they're manufactured by Janssen Biotech, the Janssen Pharmaceutical Company of Johnson & Johnson. It's a recombinant replication incompetent adenovirus type. So it's some sort of isolation that has been altered by combining it to other cells, you know.
That's right. And it's from those monkey kidney cells again, isn't it?
Type 26 expressing mm-hmm. the SARS spike protein. Well, any concoction like this, whether it's added or not, will present spike protein. In other words, if you put a poison from a rattlesnake venom into your body, I will guarantee you that we will see the development of spike proteins. And that will not provide any immunity whatsoever.
No, very strange.
All you've proved by the inoculation is that hopefully, if you take it, that the poisons and chemicals in it don't kill you. And therefore, the experiment is, here again, to those unfortunate few. And in fact, it's not the few, it's now the many.
It's now the many.
Many that have had injuries, which is a half a billion people in the world right now, and potentially 35 million deaths, which is climbing, depending on, here again, the interaction that I'm going to explain and how this can activate into what many are calling a bioweapon. But so the ingredients here, the purpose of the research article is to identify those specific major and minor ingredients contained within these four vaccines manufactured by these four companies. I also mention here that it's a human right governed under world law by the Nuremberg Code, that the vaccine specific ingredients information is critical, required and necessary to know so that any human from any country in the world can make an informed decision whether or not, which is a human right, not bestowed on any man, woman, institution, you know, or government, mm-hmm. To consent whether to take this inoculation or not.
Exactly. People should know what they're putting in their bodies and exactly what's going in, right? Because there's undisclosed ingredients, and that's what Karen Kingston was able to whistleblow about, that there's redactions in those EUAs,
yeah.
which actually conceal the entire process and conceal what's in the lipid nanoparticles and how they're being infused, etc.
Okay,
and that's so the graphene oxide claim.
Yeah, the method and techniques for these particular were used. Some or all of them. Optical microscopy, which includes bright field, phase contrast, dark field, ultraviolet absorption and fluorescence spectrometry, scanning electron, SEM, electron microscopy, transmission electron microscopy, energy distribution or dispersion spectroscopy, X-ray diffractometer, nuclear magnetic resonance instruments were used to verify the vaccine's morphologies and contents. For the high technology measurements and the care of the investigation, all controls were activated and reference measurements adopted by those who are doing similar types of research, maybe for other types of particulates like titanium oxide or titanium dioxide or aluminum oxide. And you can get research on this. These are all toxic nanoparticulates that are harmful to the body. In using live and phase contrast microscopy, I did show you a picture. I'm showing you a picture behind me now of the corona effect and the cell membrane deterioration and the creation of the spike proteins under phase contrast. I took this picture with phase contrast. These are pictures that I've accumulated, a whole library of pictures that I've taken over 40 years of work. This one, of course, most recently from an inoculated inoculated client looking at their blood and the effects on that, who was injured. And this is what's happening to the blood. So in figure one, you actually see the crystallization of a carbon particulate in aggregation. This is what the body does. The body, if it can't get rid of it, it will crystallize it. It'll accumulate it. It'll try to buffer it. And it uses compounds, it uses elements like sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, and it'll use bicarbonate compounds that are produced by the stomach. It'll use saturated or low density lipoproteins, use polyunsaturated proteins or polyunsaturated fats that are unsaturated with hydrogen atoms. It'll use that. You'll see increases in these types of numbers in forming crystalline or crystal type aggregates like this. I call them simplas or simplastism. This one happens to be identification of a carbon with course oxygen and nitrogen and based upon the values of the testing, it is identical to those of graphene oxide.
So the question,
do we know, did it come from the inoculation? We don't know this right now at this time, because this was done several months ago. So the question is, what is graphene oxide, or what are carbon particulates? Does this person work in a coal mine? Does this person work in a factory, you know, a steel
How
factory?
How did it get in?
You know, where are these particulates coming from, you know, that are high in carbon? And of course, higher than let's say a protein, and its frequency would be a lot less than these carbon particulates. And this is an aggregation called a simplex. And the simplastism is just the agglutination or aggregation of other smaller particulates that are joined together. It's a protective mechanism. But you can see around the blood a condition of chaining or stacking. And it's identified by the French word called rouleau. Rouleau means to chain. And so you see them chaining together. This is a loss of its electrical field, of its negative charge. You have to understand that the red blood cells, the body cells, can contain a negative charge in order to repel each other. When that is lost or compromised, and there's an inversion of the polarity of the cell, from negative to positive, then they start chaining together. The other thing that causes them to stick together are sugars of any sort, anything with O's on, O-S-E, sucrose, dextrose, fructose, you know, all these different
glucose, any sugar
together. Animal protein, acids like sulfuric, nitric acids to phosphoric acids and uric acids cause cells to stick together. That's why in this environment, at this time, it is not prudent to eat beef, chicken, pork, or fish, and especially eggs, because they create too much sulfuric acid, nitric, uric, and phosphoric acid that will cause a pathological blood coagulation. So in combination with other contributing factors, which may be through drugs or nutraceuticals or inoculation or from air pollution, if you live in Wuhan, I would suggest you leave the city immediately. If you're living in a polluted city, you're breathing in these particulates. These can come from also carbon monoxide. So this could be a contributing factor to this carbon particulate. Okay.
And so, it could also come from aerosols, right? The famous chemtrails.
It can come from aerosols, yeah, that can be distributed in many different creative ways.
Really frightful that this is what happens, because once it goes into the blood and does this, I mean, what chances are there of getting it out safely?
So to answer the question about the non-disclosed ingredients contained in the COVID-19 so-called Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Janssen vaccines, the answer is this, that we viewed them separately under phase contrast at various magnifications, 10, 600 up to 1500 and even beyond that, showing anatomical evidence of reduced graphene oxide particulates, which were compared to micrographs based on others who have been identifying this, and co-chair et al. 2009 for the identification and verification. So that's a anatomical identification based upon other work from other people.
So this is the crux of a very major discovery, isn't it? You too have then identified graphene oxide in all of these four vaccines that you mentioned, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and the Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, and this is the steps, which I'm not going to go into great detail here. I will emphasize UV absorption and fluorescence spectrometry scanning. And of course, you can read about that. You know.
Okay, so you did do spectroscopy scanning as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's part of the microscopy scanning. Yeah, and so this is all computerized, and it's detected, and of course, we then measure the amplifier measures the content of these particular elements that are now in or contained. If there's nothing there, we won't see it. If there's something there, we will pick that up within the liposome or the fatty capsid that is being used to carry the ingredients or the compounds or chemicals to the various sources. And I did not explain, which I need to explain, is that the synthetic or which is emitted by all the companies, that they're using genetically modified nucleic acids, genetically modified. So how they modify those, of course, is speculative on our part. They admit to the fact that they're using it. But what is important to understand is these particular nucleic acids are encrypted with a program to go to specific areas of the body. So they know exactly.
That's scary.
Yeah, they know exactly. They've been driven. It's kind of like when you get in your car and you want to go somewhere, what do you do? You either get on your cell phone or you get on.
You figure out the route, right?
But you put that in digitally. And your car then tells you where to go. So this information has been impregnated into the nucleic acid and also is naturally occurring by the very source of where those nucleic acids are coming from. And that was the work of Dr. Lee when he developed protomorphogens to drive specific ingredients or nutrients, in this case, vitamins and minerals, because what you can do that's good for the body can also be used to do bad for the body. So you can drive good or bad. But what happens using radioactive isotopes, tracers, we then traced the specific area and followed where this material actually goes. So whatever's in the capsid goes to the reproductive organs, goes to the bone marrow, goes to, because that's what's been programmed. And the nucleic acid is kind of like the truck that's driving the contents to create the theoretical immunity by using, you know, a toxin, a poison, either organic or inorganic, to create an immune reaction. Okay, this is a failed theory. It didn't work with polio, because with polio, all we had to do is stop spraying children and adults and our food with DDT poisoning. Once that stopped, and this is even before the vaccinations, the polio vaccine. Vaccine didn't do anything other than make a lot of money for a lot of people at that time. But once they stopped poisoning and polluting the environment with DDT, that was the chemical that caused the disease. And the neurological for Zika, when you stop putting glyphosate poisons into the food or spraying it, or putting it into inoculations as an adjuvant, then you prevent the birth defects. You stop, you know, these excessive.
It's all chemical then.
Yeah, it's chemical.
It's all chemical poisoning, beginning to end. So there was never any poliovirus, because I mean this storyline continues to this day, right? Live wild polioviruses, live polioviruses. This is what is being projected as causing.
It's actually genetic material, nucleic acid from specific organs of the body to drive specific ingredients, chemical or radioactive isotopes, even Triton, which has a life of 23 years, to specific areas to do what? To heal or to kill? To heal or destroy? To act as a destruction to the woman's ovaries? Is this why women are having, you know, irregular menstrual cycles and bleeding, and why within the first trimester there's loss of the fetus after inoculation? Because this is going past the blood barriers.
That's right. I think it was something like 80% of the women who've reported loss of pregnancy after inoculation were first trimester. And, yeah. And there've also been stillborns from second and third trimester.
Well, this was what was causing the birth defects, was the glyphosate that they've used, you know, in the same people that own the vaccine companies, you know, also own the companies that make the chemicals for
that's right, Bayer, IG Farben. Yeah.
So what I'm showing you here then is the observation of the phase contrast of specifically the Pfizer, which revealed based upon their morphology entities that can be, I'm saying this can be graphene strips. So here's our picture. And here's the standard comparison. Okay. Here is our picture, and here's the standard that I'm comparing to. So these pictures are shown are aqueous fractions containing reduced anatomically, morphologically, as we look at this, from the Pfizer vaccine. As we go here down further using electron microscopy, we can actually then magnify the liposome capsid.
This is huge, because I think nobody's seen this kind of micrograph before, Dr. Young. I think the earlier pictures you were just showing us looked very Very much
well,
like
you've
the
seen this
Kintec
picture
alumna
because it's
picture.
out there. This picture
I have seen that picture, yes, but the one that you're showing on the left, even the ones that you
And I explain this
found.
Over here, left and right.
Right.
So on the right is the standard, and I've given
right. I understand that, but the left one,
optical microscope, and yes, this is what is being shown. This is what
Correct.
I'm referring to, but this is coming from the Pfizer aqueous solution is being identified.
Mm-hmm.
At 100 times here, X, you know, I'm taking pictures. This is magnified beyond 1,000 times, though. But using mm-hmm. an objective.
Yeah, that's great. I just wanted to point out that these pictures that you have taken on the left, which I understand come from your microscopy, look similar to what the La Quinta Columna researchers found. You know, the University of Almeria researchers have published. So I think this kind of picture is now familiar to some of us who've looked at those photographs or micrographs. But the one that you showed just now, the capsid, I don't think anybody has published this kind of micrograph.
So this is the liposome capsid containing the reduced graphene oxide that Pfizer uses.
This is incredible to see this thing that we've been, you know, speaking about, that we're all talking about, this liposome, this capsid, and here it is. Wow.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Yeah.
So
there are other particulates. These are new. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen.
No,
Here they're kind of stacking on top of each other. So it's a multi-layer. Here again, simplast or agglomeration, lighter colors or unfolded monolayers. So you've got a single sheet of graphene oxide on top of another single sheet of graphene oxide.
So this is graphene oxide that we're looking at then.
Yeah.
Right here.
And so I'll get to how we know that, okay, here in a second.
Okay.
Okay. And here's another magnification of this,
okay,
of the mesh of the graphene oxide.
So this is sort of zoomed in a lot more, right? It's mm-hmm. 500 nanometers, 1 nanometer, or 1 micrometer, is that it? And then 200 nanometers.
Yeah, 500. This is, I think we're missing a couple of those. I think it's under 200, but anyway.
Okay.
You can see the construct then.
Mm-hmm.
Of the graphene oxide. So how do we identify the actual, morphologically, how do we identify the actual particulates then within those? So using a testing energy dispersive X-ray spectroscopy reveals that, of course, the context of these liposomes in the Pfizer vaccine. And of course, here we see the carbon, we see the nitrogen and the oxygen, which here again is quantifying the actual presence of graphene oxide. The reason we're showing sodium and chloride is because it's in a saline solution of 0.9%. Okay, so that's why this picked up.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the contents then of these liposomes, these fatty lipid capsids. This is what's in those capsids.
Oh, I see. So that's how you find out. So you see the capsids, you know, optically. You can see them with your eyes, literally through the microscope.
We can see it here, but then we then measure what's inside there.
Through the spectrometry readings, right? Yeah.
Okay. And here we have to use something that goes in to the actual entity. So not scanning, but transmission. So the electrons are picking up the specific elements within those liposomes, and then we know exactly what's in that capsid. You got it?
Yes. Wow. This is major. So this is the identification of the actual elements in the capsid then.
Yes. And if there was something else, we would know. So,
And this is definitely undisclosed.
This, in the Pfizer, that the contents of the liposomes is 100% graphene oxide.
100% inside the capsid.
That's correct.
So what is the percentage of the number of capsids, do you think, in the liquid of the vaccine?
Well, you have to imagine these capsids, once it releases, and this is, I think, why they're having to get a second inoculation and a booster in order to get this material, which is not only cytotoxic, genotoxic, but also magnetic toxic.
That's right. This is what's causing that magnetism.
So as far as linking, let's say, the human body up to the Internet of Things.
So this is the sort of the secret potent toxic load that's carried inside these lipid nanoparticles, which are being presented publicly, you know, because they're spoken of publicly by the manufacturers as being innocuous and harmless and just there to help the mRNA get into the cells.
Yeah. And the people that are passing out and dying within minutes of the inoculation are already in a toxic mm-hmm. state, or already in pathological blood coagulation for a variety of lifestyle reasons. But once they get the inoculation, it throws them over the cliff.
Yeah, you're right. There are people who have died pretty much immediately, a few minutes after, an hour after, a couple hours after.
Immediate injury. Some of this
or
is
immediate
delayed,
injury.
But I must say that anyone who's been inoculated one time, two times, or even the booster, this seriously puts your life at risk. Especially when you're exposed to higher pulsating frequencies, not at 2.4 gigahertz, but once you start getting up into the range of 5G, which is 8.4, and up to where the graphite will resonate that's in your body with the actual electromagnetic frequency, that's at 41.3 pulsating gigahertz. And once you hit there, you're going to be like one of the people in Vietnam or people in Cuba or people that call me around the world in the United States, is no one will recognize that I'm sick. They test things, they can't find anything. And yet these are my symptoms, which are all radiation poisoning. That's amplified by graphene oxide.
Absolutely. And the more of these boosters one gets,
which leads to, back to my article, the pathology of pathological blood coagulation that leads to hypercapnia, or the buildup of carbon dioxide, which leads to hypoxia, because the body can't relieve itself. It's like you want to urinate, but you can't urinate. You want to breathe, but you can't breathe. The reason why is because there's no entrance into the lungs in order to do so, because the blood is thickened. And so, yes, the hospitals are using blood thinners, but this further lyses the cells. You thin the blood out naturally by reintroducing the fluids that will restore the alkaline design of the body fluids, that will support the stomach in its production of sodium and potassium bicarbonate, that will support the hemoglobin, you know, to build up so it can saturate this radiation, so it can saturate these particulates or this poison, that you mm-hmm. that you can build healthy neutrophils, that you are releasing from the lymphocytes reduced oxygen or reduced hydrogen. This is what works and explains why some of the therapeutics are working and why some of them are not working. Okay, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also sounds like that once this stuff gets into your blood and into your interstitial fluid and into your organs, it's not just going to go out by itself. It kind of needs to be removed in some way, right? And this brings up the issue of detoxification, how you would detox from this.
Well, yeah, I don't know that we're there yet. And that could be another discussion.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But yes, there are ways to restore the alkaline design of your body fluids. There is a way. If you're dealing with a swimming pool and your pool is showing, you know, the production of algae and starting to turn green, Yeah, you got to get a net out there and clean it up, and then you've got to shock.
Right.
You got to shock with alkalinity to raise the pH back up and restore the alkaline design of the so that it doesn't give rise to these transformations.
That's right. Yeah. Wow. I hope people who have taken the vaccine will watch this, because it's immense what I think you are talking about, Dr. Young, because you are really showing us how dangerous and deadly these vaccines are, which people don't understand. And they're beings, I can't even take in that somebody could put this product out in the market, you know, could actually let this happen to anybody.
Well, they explain themselves in their conferences that they hold, medical conferences and other size. You just have to listen to the words and what they're speaking. Listen very carefully to these technocrats. They do reveal. Listen to those that are talking about what's coming this October. They're talking about a wave.
That's right. They talk about a wave. A third wave.
This wave is radiation, which is going to be causing outfections, which is going to be blamed on a phantom virus. The wave is the interaction between pulsating vibrational frequencies within the 5G range or higher, mm-hmm. interacting with the graphene oxide, which is now contained within your fatty tissues, okay, because that's where the body pushes it. And so it's in the brain. It's a connective tissue. It'd be in all the fatty tissues, potentially in the muscles, or crystallized. And so it becomes a magnet. That's why people, when they're using magnets, can attach them to the shot site or to mm-hmm. other parts of the body. And that study's already been done on the side of inoculation or the opposite arm where there is no inoculation. Once that goes into the interstitial fluids of the interstitium, it travels. There's no blocking. It passes through every barrier, and that's why I believe, and have suggested, and have advised, you know, and answered questions that relates to women who are having, you know, irregular periods, to, you know, continual flow for weeks on end, or you mm-hmm. know, aborted fetuses. This is what's happening. These compounds are interacting with pulsating microwave that is causing these injuries. And so it can happen at any time. So we're using
really shocking.
We're using ultraviolet fluorescent testing. And it's not just the Pfizer, and in determining here we see at the peak,
mm-hmm.
We're seeing is compatible with the peak of reduced graphene oxide at 270 nanometers, and then we go to other interesting things, such as we actually found, you know, within the aqueous solutions, parasite.
Yes, this is another really horrifying discovery that you have made and that you have published. So
this is a parasite, which mm-hmm. there are many variants of which many are lethal. I'm wondering what a parasite like this is. Is this something that is just random based upon, you know, the cleanliness of the facility, you know, or was it purposely placed within this inoculation?
Which vaccine was it found in?
This is Pfizer.
It's a Pfizer vaccine. Mm-hmm. And it's an actual parasite. It's a recognizable parasite.
I'm comparing this electron micrograph with the actual phase contrast micrograph of this particular parasite.
I see.
Going on, we can then identify other elements within the Pfizer vaccine. Of course, they've already admitted to the fact that it contains genetically modified organisms, which is the driver of this liposome capsid to mm-hmm. specific areas of the body. But These have been tested. We go to the AstraZeneca vaccine and some of the non-disclosed ingredients. Once again, they fall within the range of identification for the element of graphene oxide. Using X-ray fluorescent instrument was used to evaluate these adjuvants. Also identified polyethylene glycol and ethylene alcohol. And here again, okay. I don't recommend these acids or compounds in a compromised embody. And of course, can be in of themselves. Of course, we all know that ethylene glycol is used in antifreeze. Polyethylene glycol is used as a protectant. For that capsid. And in the Pfizer, it's actually coated with polyethylene glycol. And so that was picked up by the scanning electron microscope.
That was one of the ingredients they actually disclosed. They actually did publish eventually.
Yeah, and that verifies the fact that here's the quantitative information validating that fact. Janssen was the same, except their concoction was a little bit different. Their particles were composed of stainless steel and are glued together with a carbon-based glue. So when you look at this, you've got graphene oxide, and all of a sudden you have high levels of iron.
That's part of the stainless steel?
Iron. Stainless steel is made from, if I'm correct on this, I believe iron and also nickel.
Nickel's
right here. So this is what was found in.
So this is what's making people magnetic, then, possibly.
That's correct. Yeah. So if you're you're getting this will trigger the pathological blood coagulation, the Crohn effect, and the spike protein effect. And of course, this leads to the degeneration of the cell membrane, which activates the clotting factors, which then leads to pathological blood coagulation, hypercapnia, and hypoxia, and suffocation, death by suffocation. And of course, this is what.
And this is possibly what's being now so-called, quote-unquote, diagnosed as the Delta variant. When people come back to the hospitals after being inoculated.
They have a variant for every letter of the alphabet. So it's there's over 40,000. These are all computer generated. They're not real. They just vary within their genetic composition, and so it must be a variant. Even though they haven't isolated, there's been no isolation of the Delta.
Nothing was isolated. So how could any variant be isolated, right?
Well, no, they're not. So these variants, they just put names to them. This was they had the alpha, the beta, you know.
Lambda's come along, I think.
And we're up to D, so
Beta.
Delta. But yeah, here again, these variants are named by bad actors.
Yeah, well, the whole product, I think the whole project over here appears to have been a concoction of bad actors.
Yeah, so here again, if we go back, we see what's in the Pfizer aqueous solution or it, what was contained within the vaccine vial. Mm-hmm. Now we go to the AstraZeneca and additional ingredients, which are also being omitted by others, contained within the fact sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the carbon-based glue of reduced graphene oxide, this was found in the Janssen vaccine,
right?
J&J.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we see here, and we see. I think I misspoke. I mentioned this was contained within the AstraZeneca. No, this was the.
No. I think initially when you were talking about it, you did talk about this being in the Johnson & Johnson, I think.
Yeah, okay. The Johnson & Johnson and the stainless steel. I just want to make sure that we did not find this in the AstraZeneca. Again, the PG and the ethylene alcohol are carcinogenic and genotoxic. So I don't recommend those in your daily vaccines or inoculations or diet.
Did you find graphene oxide in the AstraZeneca, though?
Yes.
You did, right?
Yes. Yeah, here it is right here.
Okay.
So
yeah.
In the
that's Johnson.
Let's go back up here.
This one.
So here we see the graphene oxide, and then the high levels of iron.
Oh, there is iron there too.
Yeah.
In the AstraZeneca.
The AstraZeneca.
All right.
Yeah. So we've got a combination. There's the sodium and chloride from the saline solution, chromium, iron, nickel, copper. So you got a little steel factory there that's being delivered.
This is incredible. Huge amounts of metal then just being pumped into people through these vaccines.
Yeah.
And why are pregnant people being, are pregnant women being asked to take these vaccines when they're putting all this stuff in them?
Well, women are children. I mean,
and children, exactly.
The various reasons. I don't want to think that way, but what other reason do we have?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it goes back to that issue of sterility and compromise of fertility.
Yeah.
That you've
so here you
about.
See here you see the production of exosomes, or the release of exosomes, and you see the spiking or the crowning effect of the blood or body cells or the spiking that takes place. Here we go again. And I've put these in the article. Here's a more, this is under what is called dark field microscopy.
Dark field.
Which the light source hits the cell membrane. So you don't see the cell like this. You see it as it lights up from the side. So it hits the cell from the light source is diffracted to then hit the cell membrane and emphasize the cell membrane.
Okay, so
you're not going to be able to see some of these other things that are going on inside the cell.
Right, right. But you would see whatever is protruding outside, as you see here in the spiky picture.
Yeah, so figures 24 and 25, I'm not going to go into those. You can read those on your own, other than this one here is very interesting, which is reveals the nano dots in the graphene oxide found in the Moderna vaccine.
Nano dots in the Moderna vaccine.
You've heard about nano dots, yeah.
Yes, the quantum dots.
You can reference nano dots and read some of the scientific.
I'll definitely look that up.
And reasons for that, but this is performed under transmission electron microscopy, which is like bright field. It's bright field microscopy, and it's quantified in the same way by energy dispersion system, EDS, and which reveals the chemical nature of the observed micro and nano particulates. Many foreign bodies were identified with spherical morphology with some of the bubble-shaped cavities, and those are called nanodots. So these are the bubble shapes. Remember, we saw those smaller? Remember here? I'm going to show you again. Excuse me, so you're going back.
Oh, going back to those first clumps. Capsids.
We use electron microscope and we see them amplified or magnified, I should say.
Oh, I see. That's what those are. So these are the capsids then.
These are the capsids. And of course, you can see the dots in the black dots in the graphene oxide.
Okay. So as you go zoom into those capsids, you see this. So then you start seeing the graphene oxide kind of studding this little capsule, the lipid nanoparticle.
And here again, they're being carried by genetic material to go back, like attracts like, the genetic matter from an animal. Protomorphogen will end up, if you put it into the body, will end up in your liver. So if you can specifically direct this to specific organs and tissues and glands of the body. But when we look at this, we see within the Moderna fraction, aqueous fraction, we see the presence of the graphene oxide. There's the sodium and the chloride. And we have silica, cadmium, copper, even selenium. But these are some of the ingredients that are that are there. So we've got carbon, nitrogen, oxygen. That's the graphene oxide, silica, lead, cadmium, and selenium.
Now, can you tell, looking at this composition, if it has a specific marker as to a certain organ that it's being directed to?
No, that's followed by using radioactive isotopes.
Oh, okay. All right. And you'd have to do it inside the body.
Imaging.
Okay.
Like a PET scan, where you're using radioactive material.
You'd actually have to find it then. You'd actually have to detect the existence of this material inside the body.
Very easily, symptomatically, in what areas are affected. But, you know, here again, Pfizer's own research has already delineated that. And
I see.
And has, based on their own research, lipid capsids are going.
That's right. And when you mention Pfizer, you're talking about the Japanese biodistribution studies, which they did on rats, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly.
And from what I understand, Dr. Yaden has made a remark that unless proved otherwise, what you find out from doing it to rats is pretty much how it works in the human body. Is that correct?
Say that last part again.
I think what he said was if no other sort of human studies are done, if you look at what are the results that are achieved with the studies on the rats in particular, because the rats are used in some way to stand in for human, apparently, you kind of take it for granted that this is the same kind of thing you can expect in humans. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean that was revealed by the animal studies that they have done. Here again, further analysis of the so-called Moderna vaccine showed 100 micron simplast of reduced graphene oxide. So yes, it's in the Moderna too. There it is, right there.
Yeah, it's in the Moderna.
Here's
the Pfizer.
The identification.
And you can see it in the
revealing the
spectrograph
complex contained within the. There's your sodium chloride, but the high levels here again are contained within this liposome, this capsid. It's filled with graphene oxide.
And you said earlier you found it was 100% filled with graphene oxide.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of these.
In this case, there are some other elements in there, but. Moderna and Pfizer is basically 100% graphene oxide.
Mm-hmm. And
going back to the Johnson & Johnson, Janssen, you can see he's got aluminum in it.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So the aluminum, including copper, you know,
that's like a neurotoxin. I mean, they're all neurotoxins, I would imagine.
No, Moderna, excuse me. Let me.
Oh, that's Moderna.
Moderna's, yeah. I want to go back up to AstraZeneca. We'll go back right up here. We can actually see the graphene oxide with the iron and the nickel.
The nickel, that's the stainless steel, right?
Yeah. And then with the Moderna, they've included not only the graphene oxide, but they've included copper and aluminum oxide and copper oxide.
Is there any sort of redeeming quality of these things going into the body, or is it all bad?
There's no, from my perspective, unless shown or proven otherwise, other than stimulating an immediate immune response, you know, I don't see how these are helpful in any way to restoring the alkaline design of the human body fluids, restoring health to the membranes that are deteriorating due to chemical or radiation poisoning. This just compounds the problem. I see no benefit other than nefarious purposes.
Right. It's really shocking.
So when we go down here, We can go to my discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And my discussion is the mechanism action of these new drugs as declared by the pharmaceutical industry, coupled with what is reported in this in the vaccine products data sheet, is not clear for current medical savants to understand that the new drugs, these new drugs produced by these companies, which I've mentioned, are not by the definition vaccines, but nanotechnological drugs working as genetic therapy.
Okay.
Genetic therapy, when I say altering the drug, altering the cell membranes,
altering the genetic structure.
Cytotoxic, genotoxic, and magnetic toxic. But the vaccine is likely to be used as trickery for bureaucratic or technocratic reasons in order to receive an urgent approval, ignoring all the normal rules necessary for new drugs, especially for those involving novel nanotechnological mechanisms, which have never been developed nor experienced by humans anywhere at any time in the history of the world. There's nothing like this. This is a whole new precedence based on a theory that I take issue with. Creating an immunoset. I don't believe you treat disease by using disease products. I believe you restore the proper environments so that cells can mm-hmm. thrive.
Mm-hmm.
White cells are going to do their thing. And this is not going to help the lymphocytes. It's not going to help the neutrophils or the eosinophils or the basophils to do their job to manage and maintain the cleanliness, internal cleanliness of the fluids of the body. And so this just has some other reason. So these mm-hmm. so-called vaccines, I recognize, are patented, and therefore their actual content is kept a secret. That's what they're using, even to the buyers, who, of course, are using taxpayers' money. So consumers, which are the taxpayers, have no information about what they are receiving in their bodies by inoculation. Humanity is kept in the dark as far as the nanoparticular technology processes involved are concerning and should be concerning to everyone, but mostly on the possible magnetic toxic, cytotoxic, genotoxic nanobio interaction effects on the blood, which I believe, demonstrated over years of research, and the body cells. I know what happens when you put a chemical. I can measure it. I can qualify it and quantify it. I see it, and I can measure it and quantify it. So the current research study by a direct analysis on the aforementioned so-called vaccines by means of nanoparticulate technology instrumentation reveals disturbing and life-altering information concerning the truth about actual toxic acidic contents of these so-called vaccines, which brings a whole new definition to vaccines, even though I disagree with the whole concept of inoculation for disease. So mm-hmm. In closing, I want to suggest very strongly that the Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Janssen drugs are not vaccines, but complex graphene oxide nanoparticular aggregates of varying nano elements attached to genetically modified nucleic acids of modified, genetically altered mm-hmm. RNA from animal or virus cells and aborted human fetal cells is viewed and described. Once again, the ingredients in these so-called vaccines are highly magnetocotoxic, cytotoxic, and genotoxic to everything that lives on this planet: plant, insect, bird, animal, human, and their cell membranes and their genetics, which already has led to serious injuries estimated at 500 million and our eventual deaths estimated at 35 million, which is not being disclosed or reported. And so, with that, do you have any other questions?
Well, wow. First of all, thank you for taking us through that entire article. That's absolutely stunning. And I think your conclusions are very definitive, and they point people in a distinct direction. The notion that this is not a vaccine raises the sort of the automatic question, I suppose, because in the mainstream or in the pseudoscience stream, we do hear this talk constantly of this vaccine supposedly producing antibodies, just like other vaccines supposedly produce specific antibodies. And now there's even talk about antibody testing to test people's blood to see if they've developed antibodies to the COVID vaccine, which would prove
there's no virus. So the testing is of no value. The question that comes up, the better question is, what are you actually testing? Are you testing an actual genome, or a fragment of that genome, a genetic fragment coming from cells that are breaking down due to radiation and chemical poisoning? The question is what air are you breathing? What water are you drinking? What food are you eating? Do you smoke? Do you drink alcohol? Do you eat beef, chicken, pork, fish, or eggs? Are you ingesting vinegar, which is, a neurotoxin? What's your stress levels? Are you exercising? Are you sweating when you exercise? These are the things that will keep you healthy. And, to move from cellular membrane and genetic mutation or breakdown, from coagulated blood, to... You've got to ask yourself, are our environments healthy? And they're not. We've exposed ourselves to radio and microwave radiation that we're now going to be paying the consequences, and already have paid the consequences. And when this fourth wave comes out, my fear, which, my hope is, I should say, that this is not released upon individuals or groups of individuals or cities that have been basically inoculated and becoming a cell tower themselves and a transmitter. Mm-hmm. That hopefully will answer the question, is why are vaccinated people affecting non-vaccinated people or vaccinated people?
That's right.
Because you're like this cell tower over here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show you a
picture. Viral shedding.
I'll show you of the actual picture of the virus. There it is. It's on all the poles running down your streets.
Last time. Yeah, I think this makes absolute sense to many of us, certainly to me. And this notion that irradiation is what is causing disease in the first place, and this graphene oxide is apparently going to facilitate further destruction of the human body and brain through irradiation.
Yeah, so, putting on a mask will not protect you from microwaves, mm-hmm. or radio waves or pulsating vibrations. The corona effect is a chemical and radioactive poisoning. There is no isolated virus that you can link that to the cause of these symptomologies. So this is what I'd like you to consider. How do you protect the internal fluids of the body? You reduce the lactic acid loads. Remember I told you about the green crystals?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Here again, if the body contains green crystals, this is coming from a pushback from the interstitial fluids, which is not eliminating this metabolic waste, and it can build up. This is, as Dr. Magalko and I announced, that the cause of cancer is an increase of lactic acid in the interstitial fluids of the body. But now on top of that, which is going to accelerate the death rate, is we now have other toxic nanoparticulates, that will add to that and just confuse the issue as it relates to some of these people that are dying that have had comorbidities, and such as, you know, diabetes, such as cancer, you're at further risk by putting then other particulates, nanoparticulates that are being driven to the fatty tissues to amplify this problem and accelerate this cellular breakdown that can only lead to further pain and suffering and death. So it concerns me greatly. You have to move these, you know, these creations of protection out of the body and support the white blood cells, support the stomach, support the red blood cells in managing and maintaining homeostasis. And that's what I recommend.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You know, and I'm not recommending any specific product or any specific company, but I'm trying to teach everyone that you have the systems within themselves if you support it. This whole etiology to reduce salt intake here again sets you up for serious injury and health problems. So you need salt to produce sodium bicarbonate. You need exercise to produce carbon dioxide. 90% of all carbon dioxide is used by the stomach to produce sodium bicarbonate to manage and maintain the delicate pH balance of those fluids. So, you know, you have to start moving your body. Get off your chairs. Get out of your beds. Find a way to start moving. Start circulating to percolate.
And don't go to the nearest vaccination center just to get a vial filled with these toxins. I mean, Would you call these vaccines poisons?
They're chemicals that are poisonous. Absolutely. They're a contributing factor to the overall, just like wearing a mask is a contributing factor to causing hypoxia, you know, to creating builds up of carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Body's trying to get rid of. It causes oxygen deprivation that leads to pathological blood coagulation. So wearing a mask can compound the problem if you've been inoculated. Drinking alcohol, eating meat can compound the product, compound the problem. You know, if
this is really interesting because
fish or eggs.
Mm-hmm. This is really interesting because, you know, Mr. Fauci has now said, oh, the vaccinated have got to wear masks now. And so does, what's his name, Vivek Murthy, the U.S. Surgeon General. He says the same thing. You know,
well,
we follow these directives from the CDC.
You know, and more people will be injured and more people will die from the body's inability to remove its waste and to replenish it with alkalinity. And that is certain as we look at the contents of what's in these so-called vaccines.
Absolutely. So would you recommend that people not take the vaccines?
For myself and for people that I love and care for, I'm not their medical doctor, so this is not medical advice, but if it was me, I would run from it, not walk from it.
Me too. I mean, just after this conversation and looking at your article, Dr. Young, frankly, the stuff that you have revealed at this point, it's absolutely earth-shattering. It simply adds to the compendium of evidence that is piling up over here from various researchers around the world who are busy looking at this vaccine under the microscope, under different kinds of microscopes, as you've described, and coming to the same conclusions as you are. And, you know, I've been trying to follow the story, and I'm really grateful that you've stepped forward and you've presented your findings so thoroughly today, because I think it will make a lot of people sit up and take notice, because it's not just vaccines in general, it's this particular vaccine about which so much of a hoo-ha is being made currently. It's this vaccine that seems to be the most toxic, the most dangerous, with severe ulterior motives because of all of the undisclosed ingredients and secrecy surrounding it, and the incredibly horrific effects we're seeing people show now with their convulsions, their seizures, Bell's palsy, paralysis, extreme fatigue, extreme blood clots. I mean, we know the story of this woman. You may have heard of it, a Minnesota woman whose arms and legs had to be amputated because she had huge blood clots in her hands, in her extremities.
Yeah, well, the body pushes waste out to the extremities. So those are the first places of claudication. But it starts.
What a tragedy.
The genesis of all this begins in the interstitial fluids of the interstitium. It pushes back into the blood. That leads to pathological blood coagulation. But the body does everything it can do to push waste out to the extremities. And so this is what causes cold hands, cold feet, lightheadedness, dizziness, poor circulation, particularly in diabetics. We see this diabetic neuropathy. But now, you know, right. it's affecting the brain. It's affecting, you know, that bundle of glial cells in the brainstem, you mm-hmm. know, the major bundle of brain cells, which manages and controls homeostasis within the body. It becomes suppressed and cannot manage anymore. So people are on their own and they're suffering. You don't need to suffer. You need to return to nature. You need to start looking at all those green vegetables and green fruits. One of the most popular ones is avocado because of its high antioxidant levels of mm-hmm. Lutein and lycopene. So you need to move to, even if you start just drinking more, because anyone that's having symptoms like this they're dehydrated. And there's a mm-hmm. lot of good information on three amino acids that are helpful for clearing, including a vitamin B3. When you increase the amount of niacinamide, which is mm-hmm. a vasodilator, it doesn't damage the blood, but it opens up the pathways so things can circulate better. Should be taking upwards, you know, 1500 milligrams of that a day. I'm not recommending it. That's what I do. And mm-hmm. and the other thing is with the L-arginine and the L-citrulline and the L-ornithine, these in combinations, you know, will help improve circulation. Anti-inflammatories like magnesium chloride or antioxidants or antacids such as resveratrol and pycnogenol, glutathione and acetylcysteine. These are all natural to the body and natural mm-hmm. to foods. And these are the things that can improve, even dealing with electromagnetic frequency. And I don't know if you know this, but I think I mentioned it in the introduction, a study that Dr. Beverly Rubick and I did, which was published in the International Journal of Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Here again, it was the exposure of electromagnetic frequencies and the effect on the human blood. Mm-hmm. And that study is posted on my drrobertyoung.com. So you can read the results on that. But the bottom line is you have to keep your pH. You've got to keep the urine pH, which is a test of the interstitial fluids, up towards 8.4 to reverse these symptomologies. And you can do that by just adding the compounds the stomach is already trying to produce, and that's sodium bicarbonate. So simple things like sodium bicarbonate and potassium bicarbonate by drinking, that in water, and in alkaline water, preferably, that's electron rich. These are things that you can do to help yourself. And then if you want to protect yourself against this assault on the human cell and its genetics, you need to link yourself up and protect yourself with resonant technology. And it's a quantum link, and I wear it. And the reason I wear it, and I wear it at the heart chakra.
But do those work? Because a lot of people say there's a lot of, you know, stuff that doesn't work that's being sold.
Well, this is passive. This has 75 feet of copper wire, and in the center is crystal, and you wear it at the chakra, heart chakra. Well, what's there at the heart chakra? The heart. What is it doing?
Heart, which is a source of energy, right?
Okay. Yeah. What happens when it comes in contact with the crystal?
It charges the crystal.
It links. It's called a quantum link.
Okay.
This is passive. You don't get it. It's not battery operated.
It's not
emitting any photons of light. Mm-hmm.
It's actually working in synergy with your heart, CNN.
But I proved that it worked. We did a double-blinded study on those exposed to EMF. And
okay, I have to go read that study.
We had a placebo, and one of these a placebo and one that was the actual Q-Lane. But what happened is when you're being exposed, let's say in this case was at BBC at the edit bay, to 8 to 12 hours of editing, being exposed to fields of energy, not even as high as what we're being exposed to now. But here again, what happens is you link your healthy frequency. Okay, kind of like a tuning fork.
Yeah.
And once you link any frequency that's vibrating at differently, can't affect that link. It won't break it. So even though you're being exposed at 2.4 pulsating vibrational frequencies of microwave, which that is microwave, even though it's coming in you and through you, the magnetic field goes through you, it doesn't disrupt the link. The link has been solidified. You've created a quantum link between the crystal and the frequency, the vibrational frequency of
I see. So it's a kind of a shield. Well, it sounds really fascinating. I've got to look into that.
Yeah, well, here again, I have no stock, no interest, no ownership in this company.
You're not advertising this.
I'm not advertising it. All I'm telling you is it works. I know it works. We published on this. We did this in 1998. The study was published in 2001.
Okay.
And the remarks, the remarkable results from it speak for themselves. But here again, if you're having problems with EMF affecting your overall health, you've got to jump to a quantum link through sympathetic resonant technology. And this is one way you do it. The other way you do it is you cut out the acidic contributing factors and you start providing more electrical contributions through the water you drink, and this is the way you do it. So you need to put you need to go back to nature. You need to put yourself into a different environment. You need to go to this environment.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing which is part of this whole virus vaccine landscape that would be good to mention also is that when you take care of your own health, in a sense, you know, you are taking care of everybody's health, which is the public health mantra you're hearing all the time, that, you know, you've got to take care of everybody else's health by wearing a mask to make yours worse, it sounds like. But this is what would really transpire, wouldn't it? If you are healthy, you're able to take care of your family much better, your family gets healthy, so on and so forth. It's a ripple effect, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You need to be the change you want to see. Who said that?
Not Michael Jackson, was it? Mahatma Gandhi?
Yeah, not Michael Jackson. Right. It was Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi did say this, yes. Yeah, you must be the change you want to see in your overall health and well-being, and that you are the cause of, or the creator of your consequences, and therefore you need to be the change, and because that brings up the definition of insanity, doing the same thing you've been doing always or doing before and expecting a different result, and that is the case with vaccinations. They didn't work for polio. They didn't work for measles. They didn't work for HIV. They didn't work for Ebola. They didn't work for SARS, you know, in 2002, 2012, and now 2019. They're not working. Why? Here again, because it doesn't address the environmental aspect that cells are only as healthy as the fluid in which they're bathed in. Just as fish are only as healthy as the water they swim in. And so if the fish is sick or the cells are sick, what do? Do you vaccinate or do you change the water that they're swimming in?
You change the water.
So, you know, we've come full circle, you know, from getting more technical to just simplifying this down to very one simple concept. You can see the trees in the forest. Okay, and you can focus on the trees. But if you want to enjoy the picture that's behind me, you have to look at it contextually. Okay, so you have to look at not only the positive, also the negative space between that. You see it contextually. And when you see that contextually, then you really bring meaning to the word of intelligence. Intelligence, by definition, is being able inter means within, and gens means lines. You're able to read between the lines. You're able to see things contextually. And none of what is going on right now makes any contextual sense. It makes no environmental sense to poison the body to heal the body. That is a failed narrative of Afghanistan level. It's failed.
Yeah, it's internationally.
In the macro world, then you have to have different people that have better ideas and better visions contextually. But if you want to heal people from using drugs, that is a isolated, very narrow-minded perspective. You have to look at all of this contextually. Fish in the ocean will die if the pH drops below 8.1. The cells in our body will die if they drop below 7.1. Okay? How do you protect the cells? Did you know the ocean pH and the interstitial pH are identical? So the cells swim in 8.3 to 8.4. The body, not the blood, the blood swims in 7.365. But here again, if that pH drops down to 7.2, you start feeling ill. And at 7.1, you go into a coma, and at 6.9, you're dead.
Oh, wow.
It kind of makes
pH is very, very important.
Why would I be drinking vinegar that has a pH between 1.5 and 2? Why would I be taking supplements that contain hydrochloric acid that has a pH of 1.5, knowing exponentially it's to the power of 10? So we're talking about pH of 8, hydrochloric acid at 1. That's 7 positions at a power of 10. That's 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 1,000,000, 10,000,000, 100,000,000 times more acidified. How do you think the body feels when you take in a nutrient or a product that's being preserved with an acid, even citric acid? These are waste.
Body doesn't like it at all. Yeah.
Doesn't like it at all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can't keep doing the same thing you've been doing and expect a different result.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, Dr. Young, you are a wealth of information, honestly, on so many subjects. Each one of these, you know, require a lot of serious separate focus, I think. But you've done yeoman's work over here today. You've given us so much information, particularly on these vaccines, and hopefully people watching this. And you've also talked, of course, about what real health is and looking at the pH levels in your body and looking at how the interstitial fluid works, etc., is a much better way of maintaining your health. Thank you so much for all of this information. I'm sure everybody watching is very grateful. And, you know, I will post your post links to your article in the video description below. And I'll do my best to promote your article and send it out as much as possible. I will do a report on it as well, both on our conversation and on the article. So I want to spread the news that you have found to everybody so people know. I think people already know these vaccines are dangerous,
well,
but
well,
you
with
know.
Other contributors too, you know, just not.
And
myself.
There are other contributors. I'll mention that.
This has been a group effort.
A group effort. Okay, I will mention that.
A scientific approach, a scientific group that is come together to, you know, and little pieces of the puzzle being put together to bring us to this particular point.
Brilliant. No, you've all done, your whole team has done incredible work analyzing these vaccines and publishing the results. I think that's one of the most important pieces of information we can push out to the world today. And, You know, the sad thing is that mainstream media is still publishing lies and not publishing the truth about the many vaccine injuries and deaths, etc. And they, I don't know if they're touching any of this information about graphene oxide. Earlier on, I saw a lot of so-called quote-unquote debunkings with some people saying there's no graphene oxide. That's a conspiracy theory.
That's not true. We identified aluminum oxide, titanium oxide, graphene oxide, lead. You know, I mean, these are in the vaccines.
Thank you. I think your research sort of indisputably proves at this point in time, you know, without a grain of doubt, that indeed these materials are in the vaccines. And I think that kind of information, that kind of scientific proof and scientific evidence is so important for people to hear today. So for that, thanks so much. And
We need to pray for each other, yes, for our safety and protection. I hope. I will pray. I do every day. Pray for you.
I will pray for you. Oh, thank you.
Humanity. I pray, even ask for protection for myself.
Yes.
Because, you know, as you can imagine, you know, that we're talking about something that could, you know, create, you know, some challenges. Let's put it that way.
True. I'm hoping, however, Dr. Young, that the atmosphere is changing, that those who do this kind of thing to people are becoming aware that there are people like you and me. It's not just the two of us, but there are many others who are speaking the truth, publishing the facts as they find them, and being unafraid to stand up. And I'm hoping that the atmosphere is changing and that these so-called powers that be will start stepping back, you know, and letting go, because they really need to. At this point in time. So that's my hope as well. So thank you so much again, Dr. Young. Thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you again very soon.
All right. All the best.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye.